Welcome everyone to your final SBL deep dive briefing right before the big September exam.
Yeah, we are really getting down to the wire here.
We really are. So as your tutors, our mission today is basically just rapid fire triage. We've been, you know, combing through the latest examiner's report, and honestly, we are seeing the exact same marks just bleeding out in the exact same places.
Oh, absolutely. The repetition is crazy.
Right. So today is all about cutting the fluff. We are doing zero scenario stories today. No background lore, no corporate names.
Yeah, no case study fluff at all. Just 100% focus on student errors, technical accuracy, and exam technique.
Because time is short and we need to zero in, so let's just cut straight to the biggest killer in the SBL, which is the requirement trap.
Oh, the requirement trap. Yeah. This is honestly where candidates just answer the question they really hope to see rather than the one literally sitting right in front of them.
Right. Like, you know that feeling when you're maybe 2 hours into the exam, the clock is ticking, and you spot a keyword like, say, risk.
Oh, yeah. And then the panic just totally sets in.
Exactly. You just start panic dumping everything you have ever learned about risk. But that instinct is lethal. Like, if the examiner specifically asks how to mitigate a risk, and you spend, I don't know, two whole paragraphs just listing out the risks.
Well, you score a zero. It's that simple.
Right. You get 0 marks for that.
Or take stakeholder analysis, for instance.
Oh, yeah. That's a classic one.
Right. The requirement might ask about the stakeholder's power regarding a very specific strategic change or an acquisition. But instead of actually focusing on that one transaction, candidates just default to evaluating the power over routine day-to-day operations.
Which completely misses the context of the question. I mean, it's literally like someone asking you how to put out a kitchen fire, and you just hand them a detailed inventory of everything that is currently burning in the room.
That is a great way to put it, yeah.
Right. Like, you aren't actually fixing the problem, you're just pointing at the flames.
Exactly. And, you know, that panic response, it doesn't just stop at reading the requirement. It completely infects how candidates use the exhibits, too.
Oh, the copy-paste crime. We definitely have to talk about that.
Yes. The report calls out this massive wave of copy-pasting. A student will write, you know, revenue declined by 0.4%. They just pull that straight from the text, and then they just stop there.
Oh, wait, but hold on. Let me play devil's advocate for a second here. If we don't quote the exhibit, how does the examiner even know we read the data? Like, we have to show our evidence, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely you do. But you read the data by explaining what it actually does to the business.
Oh, I see. So the implications.
Right. Stating a 0.4% drop is completely useless unless you tell the board why that drop actually threatens their new expansion plan, for example.
Yeah, because otherwise you're basically just doing their reading for them.
Exactly. And parroting data like that, it often leads to candidates using the wrong pronouns, too.
Oh, like saying we.
Yes, writing we when they're literally quoting an external entity's report. It just proves they're transcribing, not actually thinking about the content.
That lack of processing during the reading phase, I mean, it just bleeds right into the technical fundamentals. We are seeing basic financial concepts get totally twisted.
Ooh, the technical fails are rough this time around.
Yeah, let's do a quick rapid-fire cleanup of those. First up, operating profit. Candidates are somehow claiming that higher loan interest reduces operating profit.
Which just fundamentally misunderstands what the metric even is. Operating profit is calculated before interest and tax.
Right, before.
Exactly. It measures how the core business is performing, completely separate from how it's actually financed. A bank loan changes your finance costs. It does not touch your operational efficiency.
Makes total sense. Okay, here's another massive one gearing ratios. The examiner's report actually highlights candidates claiming that issuing equity, like say a rights issue, somehow leaves the gearing ratio unchanged.
Which mathematically makes no sense at all.
None. Gearing is just a measure of debt compared to equity. So if you issue shares, you are obviously pumping up the equity denominator in that equation. So mathematically, that overall ratio has to shrink.
Yeah, and speaking of rights issues, you also see so much confusion around them diluting control.
Oh, yeah, the automatic assumption that rights issues always dilute existing control.
Right, but a rights issue offers new shares to the existing shareholders first. So control only gets diluted if those existing shareholders actually decline the offer and external buyers step in.
It's all about just stopping and thinking logically for a second. And honestly, that same superficial approach is wrecking the professional skills marks too.
Oh, for sure.
Take professional skepticism. Candidates seem to think it just means asking the board these weird rhetorical questions like, well, don't you think revenue dropping is a disaster?
Yeah, that is not skepticism. Professional skepticism is about challenging assumptions with hard evidence. It's definitely not about just interrogating the examiner.
Right.
But honestly, I think the most alarming trend in the whole skills section is what we can basically call model slavery.
Model slavery. I love that term. So true.
Yeah. It's when candidates basically memorize a framework and then forcefully cram the entire scenario to fit inside it.
Mendelow's matrix is such a prime victim of this. That's the grid used to map stakeholders based on their power and interest for those listening.
Exactly. And once candidates identify a stakeholder in that high power, high interest quadrant, they just default to this generic textbook response. They write, key player, communicate more.
Which earns exactly 0 marks.
Right, 0. You have to actually advise how to communicate with that specific stakeholder about that specific problem, based completely on the scenario in front of you.
Yeah, or Lewin's change management model, you know, the whole unfreeze, change, refreeze thing. Students will just list out those 3 steps instead of actually explaining what exact cultural behaviors need to be unfrozen in the specific company they're analyzing.
Yeah, the model is supposed to be a diagnostic tool, not the cure itself.
Exactly. So look, you have the technical knowledge locked in at this point. The final hurdle is just applying it with absolute precision to the reality of the question and not just retreating to the comfort of your textbook.
Right. No more generic answers. No more answering the question you wish you got.
So as you sit in that exam hall for your reading time next week, we want to leave you with this final challenge. How are you going to actively plan your answers to ensure you are actually driving the scenario forward rather than just summarizing the past?